This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Adam Ragusea, in today for Meghna Chakrabarty. Today, the Charles River is one of the nation's cleanest urban waterways. And if you know anything about the recent history of the river, you know that is pretty amazing. Earlier this fall, the International River Foundation recognized the Charles with its top award for river management. And that's quite a turnaround for a river that not long ago was a toxic flowing sewer.
The award went to the Charles River Watershed Association, which was established in 1965 to protect the river. Its executive director, Robert Zimmerman, will tell you that the Charles is a very different river today.
I gotta tell you, this is the best part of the day.
This is beautiful. This is beautiful. On a recent evening, Zimmerman and I took a boat ride on the Charles, and in a moment we'll be taking your calls on the subject. Do you remember the bad old days of the river? Would you like to see it even cleaner? And how do we make that happen? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. But first, Robert Zimmerman of the Charles River Watershed Association. We met up on a beautiful evening after work at the Community Rowing Center and headed downstream toward Cambridge and Boston. Zimmerman told me that one day soon, he'd like to see the river clean enough and inviting enough to swim in.
Yeah, I would like to see us come back to the river and have, you know, maybe not Magazine Beach, but beaches open again on the river. I mean, they're right here. What a great boon for Boston, Cambridge, Newton, Watertown to have these beaches reopen. The beaches were closed here, I think, in 1954. They probably should have been closed here decades earlier. And the notion, basically, in all of the environmental impact reports I read was that, you know, the river's dirty, it's always been dirty, it's always going to be dirty, and if we discharge pure drinking water to the river from our particular site, you know, well, we'd be spending a lot of money for nothing.
And how bad was it? I mean, as I said, when I was a kid, we were told that if you fell in the river, you'd have to be rushed to the hospital and given all kinds of shots.
And most people started a course of antibiotics to protect against bacteria.
And remind us why it was so bad. What was happening? Was it just raw sewage being flushed into the river?
Well, you have to remember that Europeans thought of rivers as ways of conveying waste away. So the river was a convenient location to dump everything. Standard paint dumped colors in. The river literally ran in colors depending on what they made that day. The ordnance for the Civil War, virtually all of it was made at Watertown Arsenal. So all of the metal tailings were dumped directly into the river. That legacy is still on the bottom of the river. Same is true of sewage. When the sewers in Boston were first built back in the early 1850s, I think 1852 or 1854, it was one of those periods where we didn't have a lot of money. And so they decided to combine the sewers, take the storm drain and the sanitary sewer and put them in the same pipe, which is a great idea as long as it doesn't rain. When the sewer pipe got 80% filled, that mixture of raw sewage and rainwater was allowed to blow directly into the river. So that had been going on for, by the time we started monitoring in 1995, the better part of 150 years. That was business as usual.
So there was a lot accumulated in the river by then. And so what turned it around?
Well, I think it's two things. Beginning in 1994, we started a comprehensive study of the entire Charles watershed to try to figure out how the river worked. Where does the pollution come from? Where does it go? How does it arrive? And over time, what can be done about it? And then the other thing was the investment of the Environmental Protection Agency and the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection and the Massachusetts Water Resources Authority. Once they got on the same page and recognized that something could truly be done about this, they did the heavy lifting. And then lastly, I would say that once people recognized that this could actually be done, it wasn't, you know, a whole bunch of reluctant people sitting around in a room saying, oh, I can't spend that kind of money.
It wasn't pie in the sky.
Yeah, they started to jump on board and say, hey, you know, maybe we can actually do this.
The whole idea of a cleanup, it's not as though folks came in here and dredged and pulled the stuff away. It was just the continuing pollution of the river stopped or was greatly, greatly curtailed, and nature cleaned it up.
That's exactly right. It's exactly the same thing that happened to Lake Erie. You stop dumping stuff in, and nature itself, you know, it continues to rain. The water that comes in is that much cleaner, and the river itself begins to flush and clean up. Same thing we saw with Boston Harbor. In 1995, the river met swimming standards only 19% of the time. By 1997, we were up to 50% of the time. By 1999, we were in the 60 to 70% of the time.
And where are we today?
We're about the same place, around 70% for swimming and around 100% of the time for boating standards. The issue now is stormwater. It's, you know, when it rains, that rain hits pavement, buildings, roads, collects all kinds of pollutants, ethanol, ethylene glycol, grease, oil, and runs off directly to the river. So during rainstorms, the river does not meet standards yet.
And your goal long term, you'd like to see this river, what, more wild?
I would expect in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to be fishing for native trout in the Upper Charles. If I have my druthers, and if we get the things that we're currently working on with regulation and stormwater, that sort of thing, we're going to get there. And in that short a period of time. And with that, I think you're going to see the return of all kinds of wildlife. I mean, we have otters in this river again. That's unbelievable. You know, if we've done any single thing, probably the most important thing we've done is to give the river back to the people. People are out on this river. I mean, look, we're surrounded by kids from community rowing out here rowing. They love this river.
And so does Charles Zimmerman. He's the executive director of the Charles River Watershed Association, and he joins us now live in the studio to take some of your calls. And Charles Zimmerman, great to have you. I'm sorry, I called you Charles Zimmerman. Robert Zimmerman, great to have you. You didn't know about your brother in here, did you? Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Also joining us is William Walsh Rogalski. He's an attorney with the Environmental Protection Agency's New England office. And William, good to have you.
Thank you.
And listeners, what's your experience with the Charles River? Do you see it now as a place for recreation? Do you boat on it? And could you imagine a day when you would actually want to swim there? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter and Radio Boston. And William, let me start with you since we just heard from Robert. How big an achievement has the restoration of the Charles River been?
Well, in terms of environmental results, it's been dramatic. As Bob noted, the swimming frequency of swimming, the water being acceptable, has gone from 19% in 1995 to virtually all the time in dry weather now, 60-70% of the time on average, and that's a dramatic change. So, and we've measured it by boating standards and swimming standards, and it's safe for boating all the time now, mm-hmm. except after a major storm. So,
and when we say swimming standards, what are we talking about? We're talking about that if you actually went in the river, it wouldn't hurt you necessarily.
Well, we're talking about bacterial levels. That was the major source of concern earlier.
Right. And so, and I think Bob mentioned sort of two big challenges, and I want to talk with both of you about these sort of challenges that remain, and maybe there are more than two, but one of them is stormwater runoff. This continues to be a problem, right?
Yes, it does. Yeah. And that's probably the next big nut to crack. It's a lot more diffuse than what we've been dealing with sewage. It's a lot more challenging. It requires management of land, not just a pipe. So, mm-hmm. we're starting to work on that more seriously, and that's where the remaining gains can be made, I think.
And the other one was the sediment at the bottom, because now we're talking about the cleanup of the river, and the point that Bob made really well in that piece we just heard was that nature has just sort of allowed the river to clean itself up. The sort of raw sewage being dumped in there is no longer, but a century and a half of industrial contamination is sort of sitting there on the bottom. Is that right?
That's right. The river was dammed in 1912, and since then it's pretty much functioned as a settling basin for all of the Charles River. Everything has come down there and dropped out, so there's now up to 5 feet, I think, of sediment sitting at the bottom of the river.
And so what does that mean, Bob Zimmerman? I mean, that we're talking about a clean river, but only to a point, right?
Well, we're talking about the water column itself getting a lot cleaner. Unfortunately, that doesn't really do a lot for the sediments on the bottom. And that needs to be addressed over time. Right now, it's a fairly expensive and sort of daunting task. So,
when you and I were out on the river a couple of weeks ago, you were talking about sort of some almost wish list ideas about how to deal with that sediment. For instance, you suggested to me that maybe in that sediment is something of value and some company down the road could be convinced almost to mine it. I mean, for one sort of out-of-the-box idea, right?
Well, exactly. There's 4 or 5 million cubic yards of bad stuff down there. In that bad stuff is phosphorus and cadmium, both of which are elements we're running out of, or minerals we're running out of. And maybe we don't pay for the whole, $600-700 million bill that way. But if we could mine that stuff and reduce that bill by some significant degree, that would help.
Mm. What do you think, William? What's your response to that? This idea essentially of dredging all that bad stuff up and looking for an exciting way to help defray the cost. Realistic in your view?
I don't know. I really can't speak to that. I'm not familiar with that technology, although I've heard Bob talk about it before. And it is the kind of inventive approach that has been taken on the Charles. It's out of the box thinking in a lot of ways, and who knows?
Yeah. Listeners, we want to get your input into this conversation. What's your experience on the Charles River? Do you see it now as a place for recreation? Do you boat on it? Could you foresee a day when you'd actually want to swim there? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And let's go to Renata, who's calling from Cambridge. Hi, Renata.
Hi.
How are you? You're on the air. Now, Renata, I understand this is the Renata Van Charms, president of the Charles River Conservancy, correct?
That's correct.
Good. Well, welcome to Radio Boston. What's on your mind?
Well, it's wonderful that the river has come so far, and thanks to the work of CRWA and many others. And I first came to this country in 79, and I wanted to go jump in and swim right away. And the Conservancy, which is now 11 years old, has been working on bringing swimming back. And I think we have come a long way. This now, the governor appointed a commission in 2010, and this commission is working on finding ways to bring swimming back. And it has a lot of elected officials and all the agencies that are involved. So I think there is a lot of hope and a lot of signs that swimming is coming back. There have been swim races. The last one had over 150 people who signed up for it.
Really?
So that is wonderful. And all these people who did want to swim again, and the Conservancy is working very hard to make this happen with the commission and with daily water testing and now also on sediments. So that's wonderful news.
Well, Renata, thanks so much for the call. I'm glad to hear more notes of optimism about swimming. Okay, I'm just going to be skeptical. I'll turn to you first, William. Is it really safe to swim in the Charles?
Well, if you take a look at bacterial standards, which is one of the major concerns, yeah, I think it's safe a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. I think after rainstorms, it's definitely not safe. It won't be safe for a while. There's work continuing. But, I've swum in it myself. I wouldn't have great concerns about swimming in it. And I think.
And we're not just talking about upstream. I mean, you would jump in off of Magazine Beach, for example?
Personally, yeah, I would.
You would.
Think it's probably a lot cleaner than the stuff we swam in when we were kids.
Interesting. Yeah. Robert, would you?
True. I've been in several occasions. I think you make a good distinction, though, Anthony. There is upstream of Watertown Dam and downstream. Downstream of Watertown Dam is the industrial legacy, or where most of it hangs out. If you get up in the Dover, Wellesley, Weston area, it meets swimming standards 100% of the time there.
Well, let's go to a few more calls. Sharon is calling from Milford. Hi, Sharon. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I was just listening to your story, and it brought back some memories. I had the opportunity to go to Boston University back in the early 80s, and as a work study, I was over at the New England Aquarium, and remember one of their prominent features was the Harbor View Room in the corner, which showed just how bad the Charles was at one point and the goals of how clean it could be. And being a student at BU, we were always warned quite heavily not to go into the water. It's wonderful to see how far it's come.
It really has come a long way. And Robert Zimmerman, let me thank you for that call, Sharon. Robert Zimmerman, when you took over as executive director of the Charles River Watershed Association, did you believe that this day would come, that you would be recognized, that the river would be recognized as really one of, you know, this triumph, one of the cleaner urban waterways on the planet?
No.
No, in a word?
In a word, no. Yeah. There were a lot of struggles. I mean, beyond how dirty the river was at the time, the politics was very difficult to sort of figure out. Mm. And one of the other problems with environmental cleanup is the assumptions we make. We tend to all figure that we know what the problem is, and if only we went out and did this, everything would be fine. That's not really true. Hmm. The environment is a very complex place, and interrelationships need to be ferreted out and carefully understood. Science is really important to understanding, changing, and cleaning up the environment. I would say that what's happened on the Charles over the last 15, 16 years is really a remarkable story of everybody working together on really good science that got us all on the same page.
Mm. And when you say everybody, we're talking about federal regulators, state regulators, businesses, the whole sort of enforcement mechanism, right?
The whole shooting match.
Yeah, the whole shooting match.
The regulators had to be on board, businesses, the Water Resources Authority, cities and towns, also had to be on board. Everybody has to pull in the same direction. Without that, you never achieve these kinds of results.
So the other challenge that we mentioned earlier was this storm water runoff. So what has to happen there? What is the challenge? Is this just not simply, William, a challenge of going to local communities and saying, got to fix this, got to deal with it, or what's the challenge?
Well, I think the problem exists at a couple of levels. There are these pipes that carry stormwater from towns into the river, and those pipes can be managed in certain ways to improve water quality. But at a certain point, you have to go back up the system a little bit and start managing land differently. We have high-density residential, for instance, or commercial property. There's a lot of impervious surface, which itself collects contaminants, which then wash off very rapidly.
Mm. Impervious surface as opposed to a natural grass embankment, for example, where the rainwater or the stormwater could just be absorbed and filtered naturally.
Absolutely.
Is that exactly the idea?
Right, yeah.
I see. Interesting.
So if you start telling people they can't have parking lots, they, of course, get upset. But if you start thinking about other ways to pave, there's now permeable pavers and different ways to shed water off a parking lot so that it's managed properly. If you start using the land differently, you'll see impacts on the waterway.
Mm, yeah. We talked a little about this when we were out on the river, Bob. What's the challenge as you see it, or what's the solution, and are we moving toward it?
Well, one of the things that I think the public needs to understand is that drought and flash flooding in cities are closely connected with parking lots, with pavement, with roadways, sidewalks, compacted soils that allow water to run off very quickly. For example, if you took Peabody, Massachusetts, which had terrible flooding downtown because they got a tremendous rainstorm, 6 or 7 inches in the space of 5 or 6 hours, and the city and the community couldn't handle that. In a natural system, at least some of that flooding would have been mitigated, would have been calmed down, simply because water doesn't run off so quickly. So if there were a way for us to retrofit parking lots, and there in fact is, CRWA has actually been building demonstration projects which allow water to collect in rain gardens and swales, get slowed down, get cleaned up, that would help us with flooding and also allow rainwater to percolate back through the ground and collect and come up as clean recharge, it's called, to the Charles River and other rivers in the state.
Interesting. Marie is calling from Watertown. Let's go to Marie. Hi, Marie. You're on the air.
Thank you. The river, the Charles River, has been a wonderful source of education and also for entertainment for us. My father could skate from Watertown into Boston when the river was frozen. My sister and I and our friends before 1954 swam in it. Hmm. So it was a really wonderful experience. And then, of course, the rumors that the river was causing sickness and people, you know, were getting ill. And all of that had to stop. The swimming had to stop. When I look at the river from the Galen Street Bridge, I find there are days when there are small streams of bubbly water going down. And my question is, are there still places where... some of this dumping is taking place and causing this, because it does look like that.
Great question, Marie. Let me go to you first, Bob. Is there some illicit dumping still going on, or is it just a case of not being able to sort of identify all of the places where this stuff is coming into the river?
Well, the Charles runs through wetlands, a lot of wetlands in its upper reaches. So as a matter of course, it gets a lot of tannic acid in it. And tannic acid, once it gets stirred up, turns into kind of a brown and white, mostly white, bubbly formation. So it's perfectly natural. If, on the other hand, you see bright white, solid bright white, that's generally the result of what are called surfactants or soaps, that sort of thing. And that we need to know about. So give us a call. We'll definitely look into it.
Let's go to Doug, who's calling from South Boston. Hi, Doug.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Happy to do
it. Sorry to address the woman who was just on. There's a dam about 200 yards before the Galen Street Bridge that creates that froth she's talking about with a small waterfall.
Hmm. Bob Zimmerman's nodding his head and saying that's right. Yeah, okay.
That's a side issue.
Okay.
Talking about the Charles River and making it clean enough to swim, to me, almost is like putting lipstick on a pig. We're allowing fracking throughout this country. We're taking the tops of the mountains off and dumping them to watersheds up and down the entire Appalachia where there's coal. We have 7 billion people in the world forcing more and more land under the plow. Isn't it a little bit sort of myopic to be talking about a Charles River and making it swimmable as the world sort of is being absolutely degraded once you leave sort of the parameters of our insular little world? I know it seems pessimistic, but with 7 billion, this, I think we just hit, in a burgeoning world that's trying to eat or put everything under the plow, damming rivers across China,
no, we got the
massive pollution.
Sure, just, no, we got the point, Doug, and there's obviously some big global sort of macro environmental issues that have to be addressed, but I guess this is part of our neighborhood that some folks have been hard at work on, but either Robert or William, respond to Doug's point. Do you want to take that on, Bob?
Well, one of the things I'd point out is that economics play a really important role in all of the choices we make. So, yeah, we're taking the tops off West Virginia mountains, and we got fracking issues and that sort of thing. On the other hand, if we could demonstrate and show that getting the environment right, that cleaning things up actually drives good economic outcomes, results in jobs, results in concentrations of middle class and jobs and the like, that would help. And if you'll notice, the Charles River and Boston Harbor, since they've been cleaned up over the last 15, 20 years, happen to be the engines of economic growth and well-being in the city of Boston and Cambridge. There's a strong relationship there, and I think an argument that we need to make and need to make more strongly is that a cleaner environment does in fact lead to better situation, but also strong economics.
I'm going to read what Sue wrote on RadioBoston.org. Swimming in the city is such a serendipitous idea. I thought I remember 2005 being the deadline for swimming the Charles, but I guess I can wait a few more years. Sounds like we're saying that Sue doesn't have to wait in certain areas on most days, right? And let's take one more call. Kevin is calling from Walpole. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. I wanted to know if Mr. Zimmerman could say a little bit more about what some of the changes were that brought about the return of the otters and why that was so amazing.
Okay, great. Yeah, Bob.
Well, one of the things is getting rid of all the sewage. Otters are a clean water animal. They don't like chunks floating down the river. We did a great job under John DeVillers at the Environmental Protection Agency between 95 and 98 in shutting down the sources of that sewage. And as the water column cleaned up and as fish came back as a consequence, the river otters come back. They're really a canary in the coal mine. They tell us we're headed in the right direction.
Kevin, thanks so much for that call. And our time is sort of coming to an end here. But Robert Zimmerman, I just want to say thanks for coming in and congratulations on that award. It's nice to have an opportunity to talk a little bit about some good news, which doesn't always come our way. So many thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.
That's Robert Zimmerman, Executive Director of the Charles River Watershed Association, and William Walsh Rogalski, lawyer for the EPA New England's office. Thank you very much for coming in. We appreciate it. And stay with us. Coming up, the Hub's music community comes together for the annual Boston Music Awards. No Stendells in attendance. I'm Anthony Brooks with Adam Ragusa. This is Radio Boston.